Beneath a parking lot in Leicester, England, workers in 2012 uncovered a skeleton with a dramatically curved spine, battle wounds to the skull, and bones that matched a 500-year-old mystery. The University of Leicester confirmed the remains as Richard III's with a reported probability of at least 99.99%, using mitochondrial DNA matched to two living relatives traced through his maternal line. That discovery cracked open one of history's most contested reputations, because for five centuries, most people's understanding of Richard III came not from archaeology or archives, but from a playwright working for the regime that defeated him. The gap between those two sources, bone versus drama, is exactly what this course is about. Think of it this way. The winner of a war doesn't just gain a throne, they gain the pen. Richard III was born on the 2nd of October 1452 at Fotheringhay Castle in Northamptonshire, the son of Richard, 3rd Duke of York, and Cecily Neville, who was herself descended from King Edward III. He belonged to the House of York, a cadet branch of the Plantagenet dynasty. His family was already at the center of the Wars of the Roses before he could walk. He grew up in a world where political survival meant military loyalty, and he delivered both. He became Duke of Gloucester in 1461 and served as a major administrator and military commander in Northern England under his brother Edward IV. He married Anne Neville in 1472, cementing an alliance with one of England's most powerful families. This was a man built by conflict, not born corrupt. Now, the pivot point. Edward IV died on the 9th of April 1483. Leaving a 12-year-old heir, Richard was appointed Lord Protector. He intercepted the young Edward V, traveling to London, and took custody of both the boy and his younger brother, Richard, Duke of York. The princes were lodged in the Tower of London, which was then a royal residence, not merely a prison. In June 1483, Edward V was declared illegitimate on the grounds that his father's marriage was alleged to have been invalid. Richard became king on the 26th of June 1483 and was crowned at Westminster Abbey on the 6th of July. His reign lasted until the 22nd of August 1485. The fate of the two princes remains unresolved. No definitive proof establishes who killed them or exactly when they died. That ambiguity is crucial, Evita, because Shakespeare filled it with certainty, and that certainty became legend. The skeleton tells a different story than the play. Shakespeare's Richard III depicts a man with a withered arm and a grotesque hunch, a body that mirrors a corrupt soul. The archaeological evidence does not support the withered arm. The skeleton did show severe scoliosis, a sideways curvature of the spine, but that condition would have been manageable and not necessarily visible beneath tailored armor. The remains were those of a male, aged approximately 30 to 34, consistent with Richard's age of 32 at death. DNA analysis suggested he probably had blue eyes and blonde or light brown hair in childhood. The skull showed multiple battle injuries, consistent with death in combat at Bosworth Field. He was, the bones confirm, the last English king to die fighting on a battlefield. That detail alone deserves more weight than it usually gets. Richard III also introduced legal and administrative measures during his short reign, including efforts associated with improving access to justice. The Tudor dynasty, which replaced him, had every reason to bury those achievements alongside his body, and for a long time, they succeeded. The key idea here is that Richard III's legacy is a unique historical battleground, Evita. On one side, five centuries of political propaganda, amplified by Shakespeare's genius and the Tudor regime's need to justify its own seizure of power. On the other, a skeleton pulled from beneath a Leicester car park in 2012, carrying evidence that is measurable, testable, and real. The Greyfriars excavation, a collaboration between the University of Leicester, the Richard III Society, and Leicester City Council, didn't just find a king, it forced a reckoning. Remember this as the foundation for everything that follows. The historical Richard III and Shakespeare's Richard III are two different figures. One is a character, the other was a man. This course is about learning to tell them apart.